Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avantcard. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.
This time for parenting, Dr. John Sharry joins us once again. John, good afternoon to you. Yeah, you're very welcome back. Now, here's your first question. How would you suggest dealing with a 15-year-old girl who for the last few months is always aggressive and generally angry about everything? I've seen her pretty much bully her mum and be very flippant towards her. She curses non-stop too. She even fought with her two closest friends over the Christmas. She's making our household very tense and I needed to stop, but we're not getting through to her. Any advice?
Well, the first thing is to try and put it in context. Like a 15-year-old teenager, you can get a lot. Teenagers often go through a bad patch. Everyone who has a teenager often has a very bad year, whether going through the horrors or going through a difficult time. So I think that's worth putting that in context. It doesn't mean it's acceptable or that they have to put up with it, but it's trying to understand it. So I think the first thing is to try also to think, is there anything specifically bothering her, you know, like that at this point that's causing her to be like that? There could be like she's going through a hard time in school or struggling with friends or it could be just lots of awkward things going on for her. Or maybe she's just dealing with, you know, a difficult time herself with all her feelings and all this. So the more you can sort of have a sense of what's going on for her, that can help you have that conversation. And I think you do then have to sit down and say as well that, listen, this is unacceptable. You know, you can't be shouting at your mom like that. We have to have a rule of respect, I like to say, in a family, that we all have to try to keep that. Sometimes in those fights as well, and disputes, when I talk to the teenagers, they say mom and dad are given as good as they get.
Yes.
and then when they do look at families, like you put a video, if you put a fly in the wall, that's the case. So often the parents are unaware that they're actually shouting back and giving hell to their teenager as well. So it's worth for the parent to reflect on what they're doing. So it's about committing to a ceasefire. We're all going to try to be a bit polite and get on better and so forth. And I think that helps. And then you need to think through a little plan of action. So like if she does start shouting or swearing, what you do next? Like you need to say, listen, you need to have this little step-by-step mantra in your head. Listen, you're not to speak like that. You have to calm down and start insisting on that. And then if they keep doing it, you need to have a think of a consequence. It's very helpful to think like if you keep doing like that, you're going to lose some of your stuff and make a sort of accountable to that. So you can have those sort of like backup discipline plans like that as well. But ultimately, it's about also trying to connect with her. Like you won't change it just on being antagonistic back or having just rules.
Yeah.
You have to connect with her and find out what's going on for her and build a bit of a relationship again with her. Like that's like about having times of enjoyment or trying to think when do we have a good chat, and when more that's happening, it takes the sting out of all this stuff.
It sounds like she's enraged though. It's not just she's butting heads with her mother.
Yeah.
She's butting heads with everyone.
Yeah.
And I suppose if she's feeling that way, it's probably difficult to say, well, what's bothering you? Her answer will be, nothing's bothering me. What's bothering you?
Yeah, yeah. I think sometimes you don't have, if you ask somebody what's bothering you, that might be a red flag to a bull. I think you have to without even asking, think what's going on for them, what's, you know, anticipate it and maybe judge it and listen carefully to other people's going. Like it's like all relationships when they're in a strop. The ones that work well is when the partner, this is even in couples as well, who can sort of anticipate what's bothering the other person. That they're the people who are really good at relationships.
Do you know? Yes. Who know when to duck.
When to duck, and then they know that this is what's going on for them. And then they can do something. They can know how to direct them, and they know how to listen to them a bit and take a lot of the sting out of it. So it's a mixture of those things, I think, tuning in to understand what's going on for her. But you also need to listen, say, listen, you can't be taught. You have to hold the rule of respect.
And try and set a... Well, I suppose if you set a... if you agree, get them to agree that there are a set of rules that neither party can break, then...
You see, that really I agree with you, that works with team. We're all trying to agree. We all must speak politely to one another. We all must be respectful. It's a family rule. Teenagers like that. But and it really helps if parents realise, actually, I've broken that a few times myself. I've called her this, or I've shouted her back, or you'd be unaware of that when it gets out. And if you take some responsibility, that helps. Teenagers love that too. That's really helpful.
Somebody suggests go through their phone. The problem could be quite serious and they're never going to tell you. The parent needs to find out what's going on and do something about it.
Yeah, well, like going through the phone can cause you major issues, unless you have an agreement with her that you can check phones.
Presuming she doesn't, do you have a problem with that, or do you think that's a kind of a profound? Is that a violation of trust to do that?
Well, she's 15. You have to think how she'd perceive that. It could actually cause you more problems than you'd find out.
But just doing it on the sly, not telling her.
You could do that. But then, you know, then you're sort of introducing that element that, you know, you've done that and maybe you'll have to come clean about that at some point. And will that go down well? Like, you can say to Dean, I'm really worried, I'm going to check your phone. I you could have had a rule. I think there are good rules around social media and technology with teenagers to say, listen, I respect your privilege, but if I'm worried about something, I'm going to check and look at your social media or something like that. And that's like part of the rule of understanding. You can have that, but as a parent, if you're really concerned about something, of course you have to do what's best, and maybe that is necessary to check something like that. But it could, I'd weigh that one up carefully.
Like,
you'd be better if she told you and you created the conditions that she could tell you something's bothering her.
Well, somebody else is texting in to say, we had an awful time with our son for months. It turned out he was being bullied in school. He told us after 8 months and things changed for him immediately. The relief for him was huge.
Yeah.
So, it may well be something like that.
Yeah, like, absolutely. And often teens will spend ages before they can tell you what's on their mind, and then as your listener said, the relief once you get something like that that's bothering off your mind, off your chest, and relief that if a parent can understand you and be supportive to you, that's great. Mm-hmm. So it's a judgment call, but often you have to, the better way to do that is try to set up lots of time, maybe where you're walking places or you're doing things where they can tell you something and say, listen, you can tell me anything. Not now, but if there's something on your mind, I'm only here to help you. Are often with boys, but on girls in particular, they'll tell you when they're doing something else, like when you're driving somewhere, when you're out doing something together that's a little bit light and fun. You're watching a match together or something, or
when you're not making eye contact.
When you're not making eye contact, So, but you have to set those times up.
Are teenagers though necessarily always aware of the specific thing that is bothering them? Might it take them a while to process that, even have it pointed out to them?
Absolutely, I think that's the case. I think, like that, if you just take yourself, sometimes you come home, you're really upset about something, something's really bothering you, and then you trace it back, it was actually the way somebody said something to you today at work.
Yeah,
you're dawning that you're being mistreated somewhere. So it's a lot of self-awareness to realise that. It's not that they know and they haven't told. Mm. It might take a time, and sometimes you have to let people tell you in your own time about things. So lots of delicate issues there, but some good advice as well.
My son keeps pulling things down on top of himself. Over the Christmas, it was the tree and decorations. The other day, he climbed the fridge and pulled a drawer out, which hit him hard in the head. And then yesterday at my sister's house, he managed to pull down the TV. How can I teach him not to do it? Because clearly the pain of the incidents makes no difference to him. I'm assuming this is a toddler younger child.
It's not clear. It's not clear the age of the child, because the answer would be very different depending on the age of the child.
If he's 17,
if he's a toddler, that's one answer, and if it's a 6 or 7 year old, it's another answer.
Yeah.
But assuming it's a toddler, I think that's a case really of prevention and redirection. If it's like a very active toddler who's getting into all sorts and things like that, you have to be really on their case, getting in early if they're about to climb up and get something, and redirecting them and managing to put them somewhere else, and also. Proofing your house a little bit from some of those things as well.
You have to leave a lot of things, delicate things, over a certain level.
If it's an older child, this is quite developmentally a little bit off, you would want to consider, is there something going on for them that they're like that? Like, you know, some children are a little bit more impulsive and they find it hard to control that. You'd wonder about that. That could be something like a sign of ADHD or something like that, or they could be a little bit uncoordinated and it could be a bit clumsy, and that could be like something like the dyspraxia or something like that. So I'm not saying there's anything like that, but if they were quite a bit older and they were constantly having these types of problems, it might be worth acknowledging that and looking into it a little bit more. And then when they're older, you can help them manage that themselves by sort of agreeing with them a little plan about reminders and distractions and calming themselves down or thinking before they do something, or, you know, there's a little bit of sort of self-coaching that you can teach them. Depending, this is all in the age. That wouldn't work with a toddler. So just the parent didn't say the age of the child.
I have a daughter age 14 who has told me that she wants lip fillers because a friend's older sister got her lips done. There is no way I will ever let that happen, and I told her as much. I've told her she's too young. Her lips are fine as they are, and just because her friend's sister got them is no reason for her to get them. She doesn't understand why I'm saying no, and I'm worried she is seeing herself in a negative way. How can I help her?
it's an interesting question. Like, she's very young, she's 14. Like, it's perfectly okay for a parent to have a rule. There's no way that's happening. That's like a major sort of intervention that you want to waste the child that can make that decision when they're an adult or something like that. But I think the mum's concern is that how come she's asking for this and is there something underlying? And if she's worried about that, it's a case of sort of giving your daughter a little bit more time to talk about why she wanted that. So it's a bit not, you might suddenly say, no, that's not happening. But then you might think, well, what makes you think that's a good idea? And you, then a bit more gentle inquiry. The rule is there. It's not happening from your perspective. But you want to sort of draw out a little bit, you know, what made you think about what do you think if a friend, an older friend did that, our sister's friend, why would that mean she had to get it? Like, and see if she's got some beliefs around there about fitting in or somehow that she's very self-conscious in her body and have worries there. And you want to draw those out so that you can listen to them and challenge or coach her with them about them as well.
Presumably she wants to get it done because she doesn't like her lips and she thinks her lips are too thin.
Yeah.
But then once she said, I hate my lips, they're too thin, a parent saying, no, you have lovely lips is the least convincing argument a teenager is ever to hear.
Yeah, their dad saying, you're just perfect the way
you're lips gorgeous.
They're the most beautiful lips I've ever seen. They don't believe that anymore. They believe that maybe at six or something like that. I think you want to get them, the important thing is to get her to say that, though, to get the idea out rather than and give it a bit of air.
Yeah.
So rather than say, oh, no, not at all, you've the most lovely lips. Rather than saying, well, what makes you think that, I think would be your next question. You know, you're being a bit hard on yourself. Why would you say that about, and then there might be something like a comparison, Julie has these big lips or there's something on the telly or some, and then you say, well, you'd ask her, you're making, you know, they draw that you're making comparisons with other people, pictures on the internet or media that maybe are too ideal, and get her to take a little bit of a critical stance of what's going on, or get her to evaluate, you know, like, do you think you should just follow what somebody else is doing, or should you just, you know, just accept the way you are, you know, open it up a little bit rather than just immediately close it down, I think is the tactic with a teenager, because they're 14, they have their own mind, and you want to draw it out and debate it with them as well, if you really want to have an influence on them about those issues. And you can say then why you think it's not a good idea about you know, accepting her body the way it is, or only doing so much to change it, like being dressing up, and that's all fine. So there's all lots of, and there's lots of delicate issues here about values and so forth. So as a parent, you can communicate that and say, listen, well, I think you shouldn't be doing this because of these reasons, and you can give what you believe in as well. But I think listening it and drawing it out really is the tactic, rather than just immediately closing it down.
And seeing, there may well be something else behind it. Right, we do have to take a break after that. A 17-year-old addicted to Instagram. 53106 is our text number that will cost you 30 cent. A few comments on some of the problems we have been discussing with John Sherry. There was that question about a child pulling things down on top of himself. Sean B says, the child pulling things down is very serious. TVs now are much higher, but years back, children died pulling down TVs. Children die or are very seriously injured climbing wardrobes and presses. This needs to be taken very seriously by the parent. Well, I think the fact that the parent was contacting us would indicate that the parent is taking it very seriously. We also had that question in about a 14-year-old who wanted lip fillers. And one texter says, in regards to the child who climbs and the 14-year-old who wants lip fillers, do these parents not know the word no? We've three teenagers and they all learned the meaning of the word no when they were toddlers, and they're very happy, intelligent children. Well, indeed, it's one of the most empowering things that toddlers learn when they're quite young, is to say no. And they'll say no back to you, and I'm sure they did. Anyway, if you'd listened carefully to the, especially the lip filler question, she said she'd already said to the 14-year-old, no, that's not going to happen. So she does know the meaning of the word no. That wasn't her question. Her question was, what's going on with my 14-year-old in terms of her image of herself that she would want lip fillers? Every time you turn on TV these days, you see these pumped up plastic women who give teenagers an unrealistic notion of what it looks like. They look like dolls, and not in a good way. Says a texter. Somebody else says, a 14-year-old getting lip fillers is a massive no. Yes, that's what the question said. Their face will never be the same again. What a scary culture we live in, that teachers feel they have to mutilate their bodies for some idea of beauty. And another texter says, show that girl who wants lip fillers a picture of lip fillers gone wrong. That will put them off. A quick search on Google and you will have an endless supply of trout-like women with a look of regret in their eyes. And somebody else says, I'm 42. When I was 15, I wanted a tattoo. My dad said no way, and you know what I done? I listened to him because I respected him. Enough of the mamsy-pamsy stuff. Parents just need to say no more often, and kids need to listen. Rant over, I still haven't got a tattoo. Well, two things on that. As I said already, the person who sent in the question made it absolutely plain that it is a no. It's a no-no. It's not going to happen. That wasn't what our question was about. And the second thing is, just because your dad said no to you at 15, you can get a tattoo now. It's okay to, because, like, you know, you're grown up and stuff. I think my 17-year-old son is addicted to Facebook and Instagram. I always hear news reports about this and laugh it off. But now that I see my son glued to his phone at every second, I'm honestly worried about it. He has dinner with one eye on it and swipes away. He takes it to the bathroom, which is disgusting in itself. I know he's not getting a good night's sleep. He doesn't even watch television properly because of it. He seems to be on it night and day all the time. He gets aggressive with me when I tell him he's spending too much time on the phone. I've tried taking it off him for a bit, but I mean, he's 17. He's not a kid anymore. I've no idea how to get through him.
Well,
that's all the classic signs there, isn't it?
Well, as we were just discussing in the break, that's not a one-off. That's a common issue these days, people being very addicted to social media and being on the internet constantly. And it's not just teenagers, it's adults as well. Their parents, when we look at families and families I work with, the teenagers being addicted, the parents are equally addicted, almost the same. It's a very complex behavior. When I talk to teenagers about their parents' behavior, they say, "I can't talk to dad anymore because he's just always on his BlackBerry glazed over." Or, "Our mum's just always on the shopping channel," or these sorts of things. So it's really interrupting all of family life. It's not just the teenagers contributing that to that. So I think it is a worry. Like, I constantly think it's something that you need to take seriously in families, to think about how much is social media running your life, how much you letting it contribute to that. What do you do about that is the question. Like I say to parents, you try to sort of like, he is 17, but he's still in your household, so you try to think, let's try to sit down reasonably with him and say, let's try to agree what we think is a good use of technology in the house. You try to get an agreement, and you might have a few discussions around that. Like, I'm worried we're all spending too much time on social media. Like, I don't know what the parents' own behaviour is. And let's try to agree some ground rules about it. And the sort of ones that seem to be good, consistent ones is that it's not allowed in the bed. There's a phones all go down on the charging in the hall or something like that. We'll all agree to that. Or you don't do it at dinner time, and so forth. Or you don't do it when you're talking to somebody, and you try to agree to those rules. Now, you need to get him on board for that, and then you expect that that's going to be challenging to agree to that. Now, as you say, as the parents said, he's 17, so there's only so much influence he has. But once they're in your home, you can say these are like house rules. We don't have the phone on when we're talking to people. That's the rule we're trying to have. And then if he gets aggressive, then you have the thing, you're breaking another. You can't be aggressive. We have to sort of talk these things out with respect, and you can have to think about what you do with that or consequence around that. So I do think it's something worth thinking about, but I think approaching it like, let's have some family rules around it. Let's see, what way do we want? Ask him, sit down, do you think it's a good idea that you're sitting there eating on social media? Think it's a good idea that when you're talking to people, you're on social media as well? Yeah, that's a good, you know, he might have some views that isn't himself, and then he knows he's an addiction that he has to try to manage.
But if it's an addiction,
yeah,
that's by its very nature, it's something addicts tend not to admit to.
Well, addicts, people who are addicted often have how people make a change in their addiction is they admit, I have an addiction. That's the thing. Like, I'm an alcoholic, or I'm addicted to drugs. They first name it. That's what's happening to me, and I need to manage it. So it's the self awareness of course, if they're not willing to do that, you're going to get, as I always say, don't get in the way of somebody who's addicted on their drug, because they steamroll getting towards it. So you have to think how you manage that. But as a caring person, you know, who cares for them, some degree of confrontation, expressing care around that, and how you manage that, and talking it through is the best way. Now, it's not the same as an addiction to drugs, but it's more of a sort of a similar, like, to a work addiction or something like that. So you do need to.
It's certainly, from my experience, I've seen kids who, like, you know, go insane if someone tries to take the phone off them, become completely irrational. So it's very difficult to kind of then present a logical argument about why they should do less of it.
Well, see, I think if you go and tackle them, like wrestle it off them without having an agreement about what you're doing in advance, that's why you need to go try to get an agreement with them in advance that at least we're thinking that this is a good idea to try to manage. And you need to get them to agree, yes, I think we need to try to build these rules. We need to work to do that. And then you at least have their cooperation. And then you think, how will we do this?
Yeah.
You get there. It's about getting his cooperation to give it a go.
Yeah, I still kind of like, well, I grew up in the generation where they thought that television was going to rot everybody's brains. But now I see kids can't watch television without looking at a phone at the same time. I don't know how you can do that.
Yeah, they do.
And you hear yourself saying, oh, will you not just watch some television?
That's right, yeah, yeah.
Some brain rotting television rather than looking at that as well.
Like, I've been doing this work a long time, and about over 30 years now. And when I first started working with families, the number one battle with children was trying to get them to come in. They're out running riot out there in fields, trying to get out of play. And now it's trying to get them to go out. Would you ever go out there and do something dangerous? Get them out from the technology, get them out from these darkened rooms with their tablets and go out and play on the road, for God's sake. Yeah. So there's like, it's completely reversed. The worry, the dangers now are in these technologies and to their health, to their fitness, to everything, and you want to get them to doing other things.
Plus also that kind of sense of anxiety it seems to generate, that, you know, the fear of missing out and the constant bombardment with information and the
lack of sleep. I was working with a teenage girl there recently, and she was with her parents. She was, you know, quite upset in school, not concentrating, you know, struggling. And she was basically up all night checking social media. Like, she'd wake up, come down at night to check her Facebook posts. Was there enough likes first thing in the morning? So it's a major disruption. So agreement there had to be, the phone has to come out at night.
Yeah.
And that made a big difference.
Yeah.
The phone came out back at night. And are they in, you know, the parents had to police that with her agreement. And that was the first step.
Okay, a few suggestions. For that kid addicted to his phone, take it off him. Give him a phone he can only call and text from. I would guess that he's still in school. The phone is being paid for by the parent, so he won't really have a choice. Someone else says, recently Apple added a feature where you get a weekly screen time report of your use of your phone. I've had quite a few friends say to me lately that the screen time reports have frightened the life out of them. It finally told them how long they were spending using their phones for social media. Many of them thought they were spending maybe an hour a day on social media, but they're getting reports back telling them they've been on for 3 or 4 hours a day. Someone else says, parents need to lead by example. There is no point in laying down the law saying you can't go online when you're staring at a screen yourself. At home, we have a lockbox for all the phones. Once we get in, the phones are locked away and we have dinner and a chat. They're given back to the kids for an hour after homework is done and put back until morning. This has always been the rule. We've all stuck to it. If someone needs to get in touch, they can call the house phone. People have told me that I am too strict with it, but I enjoy the harmony of sitting there without the constant pings of alerts and zombified teenagers. And, you know, excellent. But I suppose the difficulty is, once you haven't established that rule when they were a bit younger.
Had you re-established? A lot of parents ask me that. I think you can. I think, if you've let it go that they're all using all the time through the night, and you want to bring back these rules of limit, it's all about limits, not at meal times, not in the evening, or not after, in bedtimes, rather, and so forth. I think you can sit down and you say, we want to try looking at doing this. What do they think? They're all massive object. They'll shout and object. And say, well, let's look at the evidence. Let's look at the benefits. You try to get their agreement. You can even add in some rewards. Listen, let's give this a go. And if you do, we'll do a special family trip or do something.
Yeah.
If they give it a go, if they approve, so there's lots of things you can come back from the brink, so
yes,
to speak.
Hopefully. somebody else just suggests, turn off the Wi-Fi at home. That'll stop them. Well, that's true.
You can do that too.
You can do that too. Of course, Mummy and Daddy won't be able to use their phone.
The ideal ultimately is to get the teenagers' agreement about it, because if it's all controls, then they'll still be out of control in other environments themselves. Yeah. So.
John, thanks a million for coming into us today. John Sherry there. We're going to take a break after that. Why do we get old?
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.